Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast. It's me, Dave Etler, happily returned from the Magic Kingdom, points south. I'm here today with John Pienta. Cole, was that supposed to be Mickey?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Cole Chaney.
Good afternoon.
And Sunari Jayateleka.
Hi there.
I like saying your name.
It's Jayateleka.
Oh, well, I like saying it wrong, okay? You got a problem with that? Jayateleka.
Usually it'll be a lot easier to say.
So Dave's back.
Yeah, let me just say, Cole and John and intern Corey, you and Aline and Casey made me very happy last week. I really wasn't expecting you to, because we talked about Aline and Casey, you know, putting together a show while I was gone, but we weren't able to sort of meet and talk about it before I left. And so I kind of was like, okay, well, this isn't going to happen. So I sent an email to Aline saying, you know, I guess it's not going to work. Don't worry about it. I'll see you later. And then to come back and have you guys have put together a show and put together a damn good show made me very happy.
That was a cathartic episode. It was needed, I felt.
Why?
The M1 students.
Oh, yes.
There was a lot to... Didn't you get that sense, John?
Yeah.
We asked a couple questions.
I thought you were going to say, like, it was cathartic because we shuffled off your influence, Dave.
We have so much to get off our chest now that Dave's gone. No, I just felt like John and I had a couple base-level questions, and I felt like we just got a rush of sort of, you know, M1 anxiety. Mm-hmm. In a good way, they sort of got off their chest because they're doing well, but it sort of feels like when you're in the moment, they're sort of in the storm. So I thought it was really needed, and a lot of people recognized with that.
Well, such a good job doing the show without me. It made me realize two things. First, you don't need me. And two, I'm doing way too much preparation for this show because I'm... Pretty sure, because like I was really thinking about it before I left. I'm like, oh, how are they going to do this without me? And
that's paternal.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, well, you're an a-hole, Dave.
Oh.
That is why I have done little or no prep for today's show.
And we're going to promptly bomb this one. Don't you worry.
This is a test. This is a test.
Can we talk about your trip?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So Dave went to Disney.
I did go to Disney.
That's like a movie title.
So I have so much to say about...
That is totally a movie title.
I have a lot to say about this trip because, you know, it's not every... You know, like, it's not every, you know, year that you get to take your family to Disney. And it's just such an interesting place. I mean, beyond, you know, the rides and, you know, Mickey and, you know, all this other stuff that, you know, it's just such a fascinating place because... It's a business, and yet they do a really good job of not making you feel like they're sucking the money out of you, which they absolutely, totally, 100% are. You're like, thank you, sir. Can I have another? Do you know what I'm saying?
You said even... Explain this wristband thing.
So last year, they introduced this thing where it's called the Magic Band. And it is a silicone rubber bracelet that looks sort of like a sports watch without a clock face on it. And on the top of it, what's on the, where the watch face would be, there's a silhouette of Mickey. And inside the band is an RFID chip. It's actually, there's actually two radio frequency identification chips that, one that works close up and one that works at a distance of about 200 meters. And so what you do to get into the park, get into your hotel room, get into or charge stuff to your credit card, and basically do just about everything is you wave your magic band at a sensor and it says, okay, we'll do that. I feel like, so there's two possible sides to this. There's the, you know, the convenience of being able to do all this with just this thing on your arm, which is pretty cool. And then there's the whole creepy, you know, like privacy issue. I did not care at all about the privacy issue. I really didn't. And I know, like, intellectually, it's like, oh, it's a little creepy. They know what I'm doing. They know. No, what they're, in my opinion, what they're doing is they're taking your data and they're giving you something back. Okay. They're giving you, enjoyment. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's a trade, right?
It's definitely a trade off. And But the thing about it is, like, most companies that collect your data, right? What are you getting from them?
They want to sell you more specific stuff.
Right. Disney wants to do that, too.
Ads, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, they're like, oh, we can serve you more relevant ads. Who cares? I don't want more relevant. What more relevant ads do I, you know, like, I wouldn't even notice you're more relevant.
Yeah, you know, that actually brings up a really good point. Google has done some very interesting research. People in our age group are, and I'm not including you in this, sorry, Dave.
Damn.
Are more likely to get into a car accident than intentionally click on an ad.
What?
So they know the writing is on the wall, and they're trying to diversify very cleverly.
I think they should. I think any company that is like collecting data should probably go send people to Disney and find out like what it means to collect data, why people are happy to give away their, why people might be happy to give away their data, because, you know, it's just incredible. So they can tell, you know, of course they can tell what you're spending money on. They can tell where you are in the park. Maybe, I don't know about individually, probably individually. But they can track movements throughout the park and find out where the choke points are, eliminate those choke points. You know, every ride you get off of, you go through a gift shop. Every major ride you go off of, you go through a gift shop. So, you know, they're obviously going to spend money. You're going to spend money in that gift shop, they hope.
But you're also getting more rides, right?
Yeah. So the other thing,
wait, was how long?
Right. So the other thing that's interesting about the Magic Band is that when you get one, you also are able to sign up for, say, 3 or 4 rides a day that you can basically cut the line for. It's called Fast Pass.
Oh.
So you can cut the line. So, you know, a ride with a 70-minute wait might only be a 10-minute wait for you. I don't think I waited more than 10 minutes for a ride while we were there.
Couldn't you buy that before? Like,
you could, yes. But with the, I mean, you know, it's so this is not like, as you say, it's not a new thing, but having it mediated through the Fast Pass, it's about removing friction, you know, between you and the thing you want to do.
It's
genius.
This also reminds me of something about, you know, the concepts of design, like, I think the best interface is no interface at all, right? I mean, that's why people thought it was ingenious, like the Star Trek computer. You just talked to it.
Right.
Figured out what you wanted, and it knew how to do it. And that's like Disney, you don't even have to get your credit card out, you know? We'll just take that money right for you. Do the thing that you want to do anyway.
Exactly.
None of that. You don't have to look at receipts.
But
none of that.
What's bizarre is that you're happy to do it. I doubt there was a single person in that park the 8 days that we were there who was like, I don't know. I don't want to spend this money. They were all like, yes, I'm going to buy a $35 t-shirt. You know, like.
Did you find yourself spending more money because of the ease at which you could swipe your wrist?
I want to say no.
Okay.
I want to say no. I bought 2 t-shirts and a Monsters University hat.
Just a great movie, though. I mean, that's
right,
defensible. Yeah.
But you know, I'm on vacation. I want a couple t-shirts. I want a hat. I didn't, you know, my kids weren't even like buy.
How about food?
Food, ooh,
yeah,
food absolutely. And they charge a lot of money for it. But again, they make you like it. Okay, so here's for me. This is what I liked. My son has a tree nut allergy. I've said this before on the show. My son has a tree nut allergy. Every time you walk up to the restaurant that you have a reservation at, or even a quick service restaurant, you can tell them, my son has a tree nut allergy. So most restaurants you go to and you say, I have a tree nut allergy, the server says, what? No. Okay. I'm literally, this is absolutely true. And then when you say, okay, so what this means is that I need to know, you know, if my son is in danger of dying by eating your hamburger, and they'll be like, oh, I think they'll be fine. This happens all the time to us. And we're like, okay, well, no, then we're not eating here. Like, so this is what Disney does. You get in the line, you say, my son has a tree nut allergy. They're like, okay, I'll write that down. They put it in their computer, or they write it down on whatever they're working with. And they say, and the chef will be out to talk to you.
Wow.
And the chef literally comes out of the kitchen, stands at your table, talks to your son and you about his allergy. Then they may lead you on a tour of the buffet to point out the things that are good, what to stay away from. They've got the things to stay away from separate. They will clean the grill if they have to.
It's incredible.
And I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. Like, you know, as a parent,
no
it's
wonder.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is a thing that you have to worry about on the outside. That's what I'm calling the rest of the world now, the outside. But inside Disney, it's like, I don't have to worry about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing.
So when they, a place like Disney, you have to emphasize certain things, right? So they've seemed to maximize the things that gave you joy and pleasure and mm-hmm. things that, what do you think they're missing? Right. So what are they not hitting on? Because it seems like it's so inclusive and so, you know, they covered everything. To hit on allergies seems like something that's like totally left field. So where do you think their blind spot is?
I think they should give out a leave at the entrance of the ride every time you arrive.
This is interesting.
I've discovered that that the key, you write this down. The key to a totally happy Disney experience is taking a leave. Naproxen sodium before you get to the park, because then your feet won't hurt. Because my feet, you know, would hurt within like 2 hours mm-hmm. of walking around the park. But once I discovered like midway through the week that, you know, if I took a little naproxen sodium, I was like good for 12 hours, you know.
Or Segways, that'd be a good way to go to.
foot massages.
Foot massages.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse foot massage. They could, there are a lot of ways they could maximize.
Yeah, that, they may need, yeah, massage tables would be great. I don't know.
That's what they're doing all the Disney robotics for. Because then they don't have to pay someone to give you those massages. Right?
Animatronics have gotten really amazing.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's the other thing.
Like, oh,
when I was there as a kid, you know, it's sort of like
it's a small world.
Yeah, it was all like it's a small
what
world.
What do they do now? I'm not
they're so fluid. The movements are so fluid, they look very lifelike.
There's a video on, I think you can find it on YouTube, of You know, two-person juggling when
yes.
you're throwing things at another person. And they actually built a robot that dynamically can do that. It's seeing where they're coming from. It's timing how fast you're throwing them. It can wait. It can start its own loop to juggle them until it gets them back to you. It's almost scary. It's very impressive.
We did a couple of old school rides.
Okay. Space Mountain. No, that's...
That's Space Mountain.
That's there? Okay.
No, I was thinking of the animatronics ones like, there's like one that's like, it's supposedly about, you know, Walt Disney's vision of the future and family and, or history and family. And it was originally presented at some World's Fair in the 60s. And, you know.
Tomorrowland.
It's in Tomorrowland. Yeah, maybe
World.
That's, I don't know what, I can't remember exactly okay, what it's okay. called. But it's in Epcot. And, you know, they're, animatronics are like very stiff and, you know, so they could probably use an update there. I think they keep it around just for nostalgia's sake and because it's all about Walt Disney's vision of, you know, family and the future and all that kind of, and society and all that kind of stuff. But they have updated things like the spaceship Earth thing that's in
sure.
the ball at Epcot. And, we went on that one twice for some reason. I don't even like
short line.
Yeah, it's narrated by Judi Dench. That probably helps.
Strong selling point for your kids.
Yeah. They're really into Judi Dench, let me tell you.
The best future prediction
she
ever.
She was knighted.
Really?
Yeah, she's Dame Judi Dench.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, she is.
I love these future rides. Every time they have the guy, or every movie that's in the 60s that goes to the future, always has the guy on the, he's FaceTiming the friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, now that we have it, no one wants it. I think that's like the funniest thing that aspect of technology we totally are not down with.
Well, it kind of reminds me of what you said, John, earlier about how the invisibility of technology, you
mm-hmm.
know, and how once you get to that point, it's like not technology anymore. It's just, you know, a thing you have. Mm-hmm. Like the electric motor. You know, originally was a hobbyist thing. You know, people were like, oh, I'm going to throw an electric motor into this and see how, you know, it does. Now, nobody thinks about electric motors. They're just there. You know,
exactly.
They're just doing things like, you know, you don't go, oh, I need the latest electric motor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe in electric cars, I guess, probably. But anyway.
One more Disney thing. Disney was Frozen, correct?
The movie
Disney
Frozen.
Was Frozen.
I'm like literally Frozen.
Walt Disney. There's the Pixar Disney duel. I feel like Pixar's overdue. Is there a summer flick with Pixar coming out? Frozen sort of, you know, because there's like Toy Story. I always think is like the big Pixar. You know, it's stealing the Disney share.
We went on Buzz Lightyear's Shoot 'Em Up ride like 4 times. I don't know why we did that either.
You did a lot of repeat rides.
Yeah.
Shoot 'em up. Oh, do you actually get to shoot stuff?
You're like, yeah.
That's so cool that you're interacting with the ride.
I guess so. I wasn't as into it as my wife was.
Okay.
She was the one who wanted to go on it.
That sounds awesome, though. Way to go. Way to go, something. Your wife.
Corey, the intern, what's the next Pixar film?
Yeah, we need some research here.
Inside
yep,
Out?
Please.
Is that what it is? Huh.
So we have a new flick coming out called Inside Out. Should be released June 19th of this year. Looks like Disney Pixar, though. So they need to team up with Disney to...
I think Disney bought Pixar some years back.
Oh, did they?
And I never really knew what happened with that.
Then we have Finding Dory, which looks like some sort of sequel to
Nemo. Oh, yeah.
2016, so hide your kids.
I love Dory. I love Dory more than I love Nemo. And of course, there's the Star Wars franchise.
Owned by Disney.
Which is now owned by Disney. Which I expected to see more Star Wars at Disney World.
When
I went, but I didn't see too much other than the pretty sweet Boba Fett t-shirt that I bought for like $1,000.
They're like, I mean, because they own ESPN as well.
They do own ESPN.
They're such a ubiquitous cultural force. It's so crazy.
So when you stay on property at the resorts, one of the areas is ESPN's Wild World of Sports.
Okay.
Now, longtime listeners and you guys know that I could not care less about sports. I was completely mystified by this. I'm like, why the hell would anybody stay at a resort focused on sports? Like, I couldn't imagine what the decor was. Well, it turns out
signed jerseys or something.
It turns out it's not really. It's basically a complex of sporting arenas.
Ooh.
And they were having some sort of cheerleading world championship or something.
Sounds
there.
Horrible.
So I was surrounded by cheerleaders. There were these like the weirdest outfits. And they would wear them to the parks.
Okay.
So they would wear their cheerleading outfits to the parks. And some of them were like totally bizarre. And they were just from all over the world, it looked like. And so there was like, I think there were like dominatrix cheerleaders.
What?
I don't know. Like they were like in some sort of, they were like in black corsets and I mean, they're clearly from a more permissive culture than the United States.
We're pretty repressed. I could see that actually going.
See that
down.
Actually work?
You know, that's actually part of the the whole psychic.
I mean, there were no like whips. Scheme. There were no like whips present, and there were no thigh high heeled boots or anything like you would imagine. But there was definitely a little dominatrix in there, and I was like, that is bizarre.
Where do you think they were from? Europe.
They were.
Texas.
Not obviously, I could say that they were not obviously foreign looking, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like they could have been from any, any country really. So I don't really know. Maybe they were US. Who the heck knows? I was just thinking like it would be hard for me to imagine the parents of your average, high school or your average school district being like, yeah, I'm down with the whole dominatrix cheerleader.
Use your gimp suit there, honey.
Yeah. Oh, let me straighten out your gag ball.
Do they still have the weird thing in Disney where they don't serve alcohol or they only serve it at certain
spots? Oh, no, they serve alcohol.
They do now. Okay.
Oh, boy.
That used to be a thing?
They serve it for like $15 a drink. Yeah.
Can you carry it around the park or is it within the restaurant?
I didn't try that.
Okay.
Well, you missed out.
I should have.
That little Mickey Mouse flask is the way to go.
Yeah, they search your bags on the way in, but they didn't search your person, so I bet you could probably hide a small flask.
The old beer belly trick.
In your rectum.
That is about the weirdest liquor storage facility I've ever heard of.
So let's do the medicine tie-in, of course, which is our Iowa River Landing, which is sort of a more primary care center, right? So they do a lot of pediatrics. I think there's a little opto out there. Maybe some OB check-ins. You might know better than I do.
There's probably some OB. Lots of internal med.
Okay.
And then some surgery clinics.
So it's very general, but they have this it's a very pretty building, aesthetically pleasing, and then the big way it operates is they don't want the hustle bustle of the nurses and doctors to be seen by the patients.
That's right.
So there's a separate entrance for the patients, and also the patients' rooms actually have a more patient entrance side and then a doctor entrance side. And so there's sort of a corridor where all the doctors are running and talking and nurses, and then there's the more patient side, which is very serene, calm, and that allegedly was designed by a Disney designer,
so,
right?
Not long ago, a few years, I guess, at this point, the hospital hired Disney as consultants, they have a consulting operation as well. And you know, the idea was to sort of teach the Disney way to EOIHC.
Yeah.
So
it's just an interesting
idea.
Really
sure. I'm not really sure. We're joined here by Peter Denson, who's waving at us. Anyway,
basketball buddy.
I hear he's vicious on the court.
His 3-point shot's gotten way better. It used to be a little clunky, but now he's sort of got the sweet J, so I have to actually guard him.
Yeah. Anyway, we hired Disney as a consultant, and they came and taught us the Disney way, which was, you know, like picking up trash. Like every employee is supposed to pick up trash, and there were a whole bunch of takeaways, which, you know, at this point I don't remember.
Hospitals are such—they're always such cobbled together buildings with like additions and wings. They're always confusing. I'm not gonna say ugly, but they're not necessarily like sleek. They're usually a little cobbled together. So I thought it was interesting to go about
accrete.
It this way.
They're not designed. They sort of accrete over time.
Yeah.
And become like what they are.
Everything gets repurposed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in our hospital, they have the red coat folks who are supposed to, you know, they stand at various intersections and are supposed to greet patients and help them find their ways and things like that. And
I thought the red coats were there for starting the revolution.
Yes, right.
I don't know. They're very helpful, though.
They are.
Like, you can ask them questions too when you don't know where you're going.
I'll tell you what. The one thing about the Disney consulting thing that I remember and that I actually do is I make sure to, like, if I see somebody who looks confused in the hospital, I actually do make sure to, like, see if I can help them, because that just seems like a human thing to do. Like, you look concerned and like lost, maybe I can help you find your way, instead of like walking right by them with my like lunch.
And that's their big thing, is that, you know, we are not asking you to go the extra mile. We're asking you to go a foot.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly one of the things I said. Yeah.
But no one's in the hospital for fun, so it is a common decency thing of like, you know, they're looking a little distressed, confused. I mean, I think you'd probably do it, hopefully, even in your neighborhood, if you saw someone like with like a big map like wandering around, you'd probably help them.
Idea for healthcare, magic bands, right?
That seems like
fast pass. You get to cut in line
in front of everyone.
You show up at the clinic. You show up at the clinic
this
and you're like,
this is a moral quandary.
And you're like, okay, I got my fast pass. I am going to see the next doctor.
I don't think that's actually all that ridiculous. There's an attempt, I think, to make people with a certain healthcare coverage plan have access to same-day appointments with specialists, which is a huge initiative. I mean, think about how, you know, some of these specialties are booked. You know, a new appointment might be 6 months out. So, they're trying to make that push.
Good luck with that brain
tumor. Magic band.
Right.
It's not that ridiculous.
How would you feel if, you know, somebody came in and you're like been waiting there for like a half an hour and somebody comes in with their magic band? It's like,
I'd be so mad. I don't know. If I had a magic band, I would feel guilty too. Doing that in a healthcare setting where you're supposed to be all equal and, you know,
it's all about
we already do that. Though it's really tragic, and I don't want to be the huge buzzkill here, but if you've got money, you've got insurance, you already have in a sense a magic band. You can already get faster, more compliant, more, you know, compassionate healthcare than the average person who has no insurance.
How about relative or spouse who works at the hospital? That study's been shown time and time again that they get plugged in about twice as fast as the average person.
Really?
Yep.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
mom can get herself into things, and she can get my dad into things, like just talk to people, and it's very helpful.
You got an inside track.
Well, the more people that we, you know, what is it? Healthcare already employs like 15% of our nation or something like that. So once everyone works for healthcare, then there you go. Problem solved.
That's all your right. Master plan. So everyone.
Just one big happy family.
The healthcare military industrial complex.
So we do have to talk about healthcare.
Well, let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be back in just a second on the Short Code Podcast.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
I hear one of us had an exam recently.
As of 9 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
So, I just took my surgery clerkship exam, and what we discussed...
You seem happy
about
it.
...the exam afterwards. Well, I'm more just nonchalant because it's done, and I'm glad to be done with surgery.
So, not a surgeon?
No.
Okay. Explain what you're not saying anything.
Yeah.
So,
what's going on here?
So, all of us... Well, a bunch of us talked about it afterwards, and we were... So the main thing that came up is very little of the exam had anything to do with surgery. Like, you know, we spent hours in the OR watching surgeries. We can tell you, how to do whatever surgery because we watched the technique and we had to, review the technique beforehand. We had to review the anatomy beforehand. But none of that is tested on the exam. And then...
What are they testing you on?
It's mostly internal medicine stuff. Okay. Which is a big problem because, some people haven't even taken internal medicine yet. So there is a known, big disadvantage if you haven't taken internal medicine yet because you haven't learned that stuff.
So can I interrupt you for one second? I need a layperson's definition of what you mean by internal medicine stuff.
Internal medicine stuff, as in how to manage any kind of disease. So, a patient can come in with a list of symptoms and then... You should know what kind of labs to get, what kind of tests to get, and then how to what the diagnosis is.
So,
and that's
more general stuff.
Medicine.
That's right.
Yeah, the surgery.
Anatomy. You would expect.
Yeah, and then say someone how to manage a surgical disease, what complications come up. What do you do with those complications, or? When do you refer someone to surgery? That kind of stuff. And it was very little. Maybe 20% of that exam was that. The rest of it was, stuff that we learned from other... Yeah, basically internal medicine. A lot of just pneumonia and what kids get from falling. I mean, there's a lot of just, family medicine on there. Simple injuries. A lot of
it's a shelf exam.
Yeah.
Oh, that's strange.
And so it was just interesting. So everyone who's taken it before tells you this beforehand, and they warn you that it is a lot of internal medicine. But when you go to study for it, everyone on the clerkship at that time reads surgical preparation textbooks and stuff for specifically this clerkship exam, and it always goes over surgical things. And then each time,
so is it that you don't believe?
I don't know, because what you're else like, are you supposed to look at?
No, you're like, no, that's crap. That can't be true, what the previous class told me, or the previous group.
Well, you take it into heart. You take it to heart. You do try to remember your, as you're going through the clerkship, you try to catch up on some of that internal medicine stuff. But you are going to study the book that, these companies have hopefully have put together, doctors have put together.
People who know better, yeah.
Yeah, and you trust them. And then it didn't help you at all on the exam. And so...
So the guidebook, for that shelf exam was useless?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying? That's interesting.
I love the cognitive dissonance, though, of you knew this going in. and if I'd have somehow created this textbook that was... It was the internal med shelf prep book, but I somehow took the cover off and made it called surgery.
Exactly. People would do it a lot better.
Isn't that crazy? But you even knew. It wasn't like a trick. Yeah. And so it's crazy that even then you still couldn't get past that,
Yeah.
And name is a powerful thing.
Oh, I would totally. I couldn't sit there and read internal med shelf book knowing I had a surgery thing coming up. Even if everyone around me said, you have to do this.
Yeah. So
did you?
That's what everyone does. And so it's just a repeating...
That's great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
It just happens every clerkship, it seems like.
Do you have the opportunity to go to somebody and say, so that was an interesting experience, and here's what I, here's my perception. Why?
It's actually, that's actually the hidden curriculum of surgery right there. You're not supposed to do what the evidence says. You're supposed to do what you're told. And what you're told is you need to study X, Y, and Z. And what you did, you were like, ooh, there's this thing. And maybe the evidence says you do A, B, and C. No.
You do what you're told.
That's true.
That's meta.
Hidden curriculum, guys.
Yep. So I'm more curious about these shelves. So John and I are just finishing our preclinical years. And I was really looking forward to sort of the testing schedule being less rigorous. But I realize now that's... So tell me about the prep work that goes into a shelf exam such as surgery.
So the main way you study for these is questions that are specifically geared towards USMLE, you know, MBME questions. Because that's the, you know, the nationally based question set. And they, you know, they have these questions that are specifically worded in certain ways. They're all like a small paragraph with information, and then you have to always find the next best option, like for that particular patient. Mm-hmm. It's just generally the main question that you get asked. What do you do next? And it, that in itself is really frustrating because there's a lot of things you can do next, and sometimes it doesn't matter which one you do next. But anyway, that's off topic.
Are you cramming all night before? Are you doing a week before? Are you doing a month before?
You can't cram for these. For a 6-week clerkship, you'd want to start probably a month before. Most people take the first week or two or a few days off just because they just got done with the previous exam of, you know, whatever clerkship, and they're tired. So you take a little bit of time off to rest.
From studying.
Yeah.
Because you're, I mean, you, I don't know. Just to be clear, you don't have the time off. You're,
no.
Right.
Yeah.
You come. I mean, I think everybody knows that except maybe our pre-med listeners, so I just wanted to shut up, Dave.
So yeah, you come home and instead of going straight to studying, you relax, you watch TV, you know, do whatever else, and then you realize that the test is coming up in say 4 weeks or whatever, and you open up your book that is specifically geared toward that particular exam, and you either get that from the counseling center. Usually the clerkship directors suggest certain textbooks, and you kind of can pick or choose as however many you want, like whatever you're comfortable with. A lot of people just ask their the other students that already did that particular clerkship, and then, you know, ask what they did, what worked for them. So we kind of figure out what book you're going to use and then try to get through that material within the next 4 weeks, and then do lots of questions, usually on UWorld. That's generally the exam practice content that we study for. And then, you know, that's good also for practice for step one or step two, whatever you're, well, step two when you're taking that. And then you repeat that every, you know, 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whenever you get a shelf exam.
So are you doing step two UWorld questions in that particular topic? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And they don't have that many. It's usually like 100 something, like 150 questions in that topic. So then you have to go, if you get through that, which most people do, I don't usually, but most people do. And then you can try looking for questions. There are library websites through here. There's like Exam Master and Board Vitals.
Wait, why don't you get through all the questions? What's wrong with you?
I
mean, do you choose not to? Or are you just like, okay, I've done enough?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm just like, I don't. It gets boring after a while.
That's weird. Studying is boring?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it is.
I'm the odd man here.
Having never studied before, like almost literally never having studied before, you should see my college transcripts.
You should see mine.
So I don't know.
No, really?
We could have a race to the bottom.
Oh, man.
Really?
I'd win.
Let's do it.
I won in my first semester.
Same here. I got a D in mythology.
Did you get a letter?
It turns out you can't answer questions about mythology if you don't read the mythology.
I'm probably one of the few 18-year-olds who has ever been grounded, so.
Ooh. Did you get the letter that they send, like, warning you?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a kick in the butt?
Act pro and everything.
What's that? Oh, that's how the hip people say it.
Yeah,
it's an exclusive club that you have to belong to. Yeah, to use those words. I'm not in
They
that.
Wear leather jackets.
and smoke in alleys.
Gloves without fingertips.
You got some hair grease, like a pack of cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve.
Dave was
maybe
a
switchblade.
Yep, he was a shark.
When you're an act pro.
The musical will be coming out next semester. Yes,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail you. I just got so captivated by that.
I'm not even sure what I was saying.
That's
right. Okay, I have one more follow-up question. This is more for me than any listeners.
That's what the show is about. Cool.
Yeah, it's about me. I don't get a sense of people a lot of times failing these exams. I get more of a sense there's like a gradient of people doing very well because they want to honor the course, or they maybe don't do so well. Is there a lot of pressure? Like, do you feel like, oh, I'm going to fail this? Is it more just like, I really want to succeed and do well?
I don't think there's too much of a pressure about failing it. Mm-hmm. I think it's accepted that most people will study hard enough to not fail it. Like, just being here, we're going to try very hard not to fail it. Mm-hmm. I think you get another chance on a shelf exam specifically. You do get another chance if you do fail.
Okay.
I don't know if there are any repercussions to that. I haven't heard about it or, so I don't know if that goes on your grade or not.
But it doesn't happen.
Don't quote me on this, but I think if you fail and then even if you honor, it's just a pass.
Oh, like averages out.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that.
I don't know. And I don't know about the other clerkships either. I just know for the shelf exam that you can take it twice. But I don't know about the...
Which ones have shelf exams?
Let's see. Psych. So psychiatry, surgery, internal medicine, pediatrics, and OB.
So that's pretty much most of the big players.
Yeah. The 6-weekers. And then psychiatry was the 1 4-week rotation.
I don't know why more testing just makes me like nauseous right now, but we have to do it, John. We gotta head
It'll
back
be
next
okay.
year. Yeah,
It'll
I know. You're
okay.
reassuring me. You're and surgery is hard, so that's what you just got done with it. So, and you look.
I feel like surgery is also physically hard.
Yeah, you look happy.
Yeah, you're exhausted. Uh-huh. But
because you got to do a lot of standing.
Yes.
Right.
And retraction.
Aleve, people. Like Aleve. Remember the Naproxen. Disney. Remember the Disney message.
Yes.
Naproxen sodium is your friend.
Especially for retracting things. Yeah. There's a lot of standing.
It's like the big job, like hold the retractor, right?
Yeah, for the medical student.
I'm like, ooh, I get to hold the retractor.
Which is more exciting than just standing there and watching.
At least you're closer, right?
Yeah, so you do want to hold the retractor even though it sucks sometimes.
So at least now you're doing something important when you fall asleep during surgery.
You know what I think? I think, you know, like I've never held a retractor before, so I don't really, I imagine though that you're just sort of keeping tension on it for a long time. You don't have to keep like a ton of tension on it, but you have to keep it for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So why don't they just like create a retractor that they straps to your body and then you just sort of lean back a little bit?
They do, because when you fall asleep.
Yeah, they do that.
For patients. Mm-hmm. There's like this like, oh, it's almost, what would you call it? Like a halo over their body that then the retractor is attached to.
Oh.
Yeah, so there is one.
Because you're making the patient do all the work. They don't care. They're asleep.
No.
Yeah. There's one for abdominal surgeries. Yeah, it's like a halo, a metal halo that goes around the abdomen. And then the other retractors then like hook into that.
All right.
And then you can screw it. So it pulls.
But Dave, to answer your question, the reason you don't do that is so that when you fall asleep, if you go backwards,
you won't fall either into the patient or...
Or you faint. People do faint sometimes.
My wife is a research audiologist. She does cochlear implants. And what she's noticed is that... or she has done cochlear implants. What she's noticed is that you can't really predict who is going to pass out or who, you know, like... The biggest, burliest, like toughest person in the room might be the one who passes out. You know, like
those guys are dangerous too
because they'll like fall and mess things up.
Yeah. I think everyone probably has just, I mean, not fainted, but gotten lightheaded where they had to go and sit down. And what they've said is that it is okay to go and sit down. Please do not fall and hurt yourself or, you know, mess up the sterile field.
Right.
Like that is very bad.
Right.
So you need to know.
Don't be a hero.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel lightheaded?
Yeah. I think I had. So my first experience was an OB and I have felt lightheaded like that once before in undergrad. while I was watching a frog surgery, and it was, I don't know why, it was random.
Watching
not
what?
Unexpected. A frog surgery. I was learning how to do frog surgery.
I don't know.
Like harvesting eggs.
Surgery on frogs?
Yeah, harvesting
they always
eggs.
Harvest eggs from frogs. Why is it always frogs they pull the eggs off of?
Because they're big.
Oh,
the
oocytes
are big.
Okay.
Easy to inject genetic material into.
Sure.
So I kind of knew what was going on when it started happening at the OR, but I wasn't sure. It's been years. So, and it presented differently. Before, instead of like my vision completely like getting, like going, the peripheral vision going, I felt all like hot and my stomach started hurting and I was like, what is going on? And then I got the rest of it, which is like sweating and feeling the lightheadedness. And then I went and sat down. And since then I've learned to eat a big breakfast every morning. I think that's what people tell you to do. Eat and be hydrated. Like don't try to dehydrate yourself so you don't have to leave the surgery to pee.
It's hard when you get up that early too to eat a big, you know, usually I'm sure you're running out the door and so it's hard to get a big breakfast.
It is. So what I figured out, since I can't eat a heavy breakfast at 3:30 in the morning, it just feels horrible. I do yogurt, you know, and then take a bunch of other snacks like with me and then leave it in the fridge in the OR lounge. And then, you know, in between surgeries, I'm always snacking. So I'll eat another yogurt or, you know, a bunch of fruit. And my lunches are usually multiple lunches. I just like stagger it throughout the day.
I thought you were going to say something about meth.
You always bring it back there. It always comes back there.
You know, we can't not. I can't not mention the pharmacologic options. Okay.
I'm reading about why the sight of blood might make some people pass out.
We talked about this. Alpha beta male traits. Remember this?
We did. I remember this.
I'm a beta male. Not an alpha male.
It doesn't make you hungry like it does the rest of us.
I'm reading here at Psychology Today is that if you're a caveman and another caveman comes over and cuts your arm off, the sight of blood or injury may cause you to faint. Which I don't know. I might have ascribed that to having your arm off, but anyway. So when you're laying there on the ground, you'll look like you're dead to the other caveman, and he won't cut your head off.
Beta male.
Because we can't have the entire clan killing each other.
And the drop in heart rate and blood pressure, it is believed, is beneficial in slowing bleeding if one is passed out from blood loss.
The beauty...
If you see your blood, you think, oh my God, that's me bleeding. I'm going to pass out.
See, the beauty of that is it's just like, you know, when James Bond is told, you know, join me or die, he always picks die and somehow miraculously wins the day. But why doesn't he just say, okay, I'll join you, and then kill the guy? That's exactly what this reflex is for.
Because he's a man of principle.
So you can pass out, they think you're dead, and then when they turn their back, then you club them on the head. It's perfectly logical.
Now I can't watch another James Bond film ever.
Also, the choking thing. When the guy chokes you, don't choke him back. He already started choking you first.
The times.
You're going to die before he does. Punch him in the throat, okay? That is my advice. He's got both of his hands out of the way. He can't protect it. Punch his throat.
James Bond's an idiot.
He's absolutely
Why don't they have an idiot?
He's promiscuous, too.
John Pienta.
Yeah.
Pienta. John Pienta.
John Pienta.
Also, right, don't get me started on the martini thing.
Can't stand martinis.
You stir them. You shake juice cocktail.
I had no idea it was. I know you've clearly thought a lot about this. All right, we got to wrap this up. I got things to do. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got things to do.
You know what I'm saying?
I would like to continue this discussion literally all day long because of the things that I have to do. But thank you. If you like what you heard today on the Short Code Podcast, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcode.com. Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so that we can all stay up to date on what's happening at the Margins of Medicine. This show is made possible by the strange world we live in and a generous donation by the Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox. And our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week. John, weird disease of the week.
Go. Ondine's curse. So you lose the ability to consciously control your breathing, or rather the other way around. You lose the ability to breathe automatically, and you have to actually consciously breathe.
Who's this Ondine, and why is he such a jerk?
So Ondine was a nymph that was cursed to have to watch every breath.
He's a victim. Sorry, Ondine.
I think it was a she.
She, okay.
Greek mythology.